And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light, 3-0, and she's gone!
Welcome, everybody, to the 3-0 Show on The Athletic. And today, we've got a great show. We're going to be doing the NL Central. And we got Britt Giroli back. Congratulations, Britt, and welcome back. And we've got Katie Wu, who has helped us all along through your absence and also happens to be an expert on the NL Central. Sees a lot of NL Central games. So this is going to be a great episode. How are you guys doing today? How was your time off, Britt?
Anyone who's been through maternity leave knows is it's like the most stressful, boring, wild, anxiety-ridden, exhilarating time of your life. So happy to be back talking baseball. And hopefully we don't hear any babies cry in the background. But if we do, we can blame my husband.
And Katie, where's the cat? What's the cat's name? We had to run it all over you for a second.
Yes. No, this is the glamour that is beat writing, traveling. This is like my fifth week not at home in Miami covering the World Baseball Classic. But I'm not going to leave my pride and joy, my four-legged angel, for 5 weeks. So she actually did 4 weeks of spring training with me in Jupiter.
Wow.
And she's now in Miami. And because she doesn't know how to act right now because I have the camera on, she is in the bathroom. But it's a pretty spacious bathroom, and hopefully she'll be okay for the next hour. And
what does she think of hotels?
She's so, honestly, she's so used to it. I think she just likes going somewhere new.
You take her on the road?
I will say, no, not all the time, just spring training. I did have to tie the curtains up, though, because she likes to think those are toys, and I don't have the budget to fix those, and neither does the Athletics. So curtains are tied up. That's fine.
My cat is in a feud with my dogs, and I don't know it's going to end anytime soon. Also, my cat could eat my dogs, so it's an interesting thing to have small dogs and a very large cat. Anyway, back to the NL Central. Here we go. Up first, we're doing this alphabetically by team name. Or something random, but it ends up with the Brewers being first. And it's really kind of a shame that DVR is on paternity leave because this is his not-so-secret home team of choice. But the Brewers this year, I think, are going to have a great team. But it's the same question that we kind of have every year. And for me, the question is there enough offense? So, Brett, do you think there's enough offense in Milwaukee in this lineup to get them to the top of this division this year?
Probably not. I think when you look, if you're going to go spot by spot with St. Louis and them, for example, you're going to take St. Louis pretty much every time. Now, St. Louis has issues we're going to get to later, most notably like their starting pitching. But when we look at the Brewers, the big question is that offense. And the bigger question, guys, is Christian Yelich. Like, are we going to see the Yelich of 2018? Because if so, then I believe the Brewers have a chance. If not, I'm going to put them in second place by quite a big margin. I mean, this is a very weird division in that it's kind of the Cardinals and everybody else, it feels like. And the Brewers, to me, are maybe that solid wild card pick. I think they still have a bunch of hitters in that lineup, but they just don't have anybody that strikes real fear into your hearts. Wilson Contreras is a nice pickup. They made some marginal moves, but they're still, to me, kind of that league average at best lineup. And I just don't think that they have enough firepower. Yes, they have a good rotation. We know about Corbin Burns. We know about Brandon Woodruff. We know that they can pitch. But let's not forget that the bullpen has considerable less depth than we've seen over the years. I'm probably already skipping ahead two or three questions here. But to me, I just don't think the offense, which has been the problem, as you mentioned, the last couple of years, I just don't think the front office has gone out and devoted enough resources towards fixing that lineup. I think we kind of need to say, this may be who Christian Yelich is, right? He may not be this power hitting outfielder. This may be him. And if so, I just don't think they did enough to catch the Cardinals at all.
Yeah, I know. The weird thing for me about Yelich is that he still hits the ball hard and, you know, he still has good plate discipline. He still does a lot of things right, but he just hits so many balls on the ground. It's the kind of the thing that people said about him in Miami, and he's kind of returned to those days. So I can't imagine that he would hit 30-plus homers. But, you know, over time, the offense, would you be surprised if I told you it was the 11th best offense by WRC Plus, that it was an above average offense last year? Katie, what do you think of this offense? You know, do you think that addition of William Contreras and Rowdy Tellez and that sort of over time they can build a good enough offense, or do you think it's still lacking in a couple places?
You know, I think when I pull up their projected starting lineup on Fangraphs right now, we've talked about Yelich, and like we talk about the Brewers every year, is their offense enough? We also talk about Yelich every year. Is he going to be similar to what we saw? I don't even want to say his MVP caliber form, but something that is maybe even a little less than that, I think the Brewers would gladly take. But I'm looking at their 2-5 hitters. Willy Adames, I think, is relatively underrated in terms of a national scale. I like their 3-4-5 and Rowdy Tellez, William Contreras, and Jesse Winker. But after that, it really tapers off for me. I think Luis Urias is a scrappy player. I don't know necessarily if he packs that offensive power or punch. But when you're looking at the Brewers offensively compared to the Cardinals lineup, I just think the Cardinals lineup blows them out of the water. And this is, again, another two-team division. I don't want to discredit what the Cubs have done. We'll get to them, I'm sure. But when you're looking at who's going to win the division, it kind of baffles me that it seems to be so close. I think from a lineup perspective and an offense perspective, the Cardinals really blow the Brewers out of the water here.
Yeah, it is interesting. The projected standings here, you know, on Fangraphs say that the Brewers will win 84 games and the Cardinals 86, and say, you know, it'll be a tough division, just like you're saying. I really want to pick the Brewers because I think that this offense is getting better. I think Willy Adames was really good. I thought the William Contreras deal was really good. I think they make really smart, you know, like picking up Winker for very little was, I think, also really good. I like a lot of the decisions they make, but I kind of agree with you guys. I mean, we're looking at, you know, Garrett Mitchell, Tyrone Taylor, or Brian Anderson, Luis Urias at the bottom of this lineup. And if it isn't going to be a lineup that has an MVP type person in it, then those three need to all be above average. It needs to be the kind of lineup where everyone's above average. And I'm not sure that's going to happen. And then on the pitching side, yes, they've still got Burns. They've still got Woodruff. Freddy Peralta could come back and be great this year, but I don't see the same depth that, you know, they've kind of had in the past. You know, Andy, is it not Andy? It's Aaron Ashby. Which Ashby is it? Andy is this like father. He's Aaron. Anyway, Ashby is hurt. And
it's Aaron. And,
that's right. Hauser, I believe, was hurt and is like sort of in between being, yes, he had a groin. It's good. Better to have a groin than not. But he is going to be somewhere in between a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher, partially because he has no more options left. So they're going to be playing this game with him. Ashby's hurt. The back of the bullpen, I don't think, is good as it used to be. I like Jake Cousins, but then, you know, it's and Matt Bush. But then, you know, Devin Williams throws this crazy. The airbender is, I think, a thing that might hurt him. You know, he gets hurt a lot. And if you just do that with your hand, you just take it and go like that. Ow. Everything hurts when I do that. And that's kind of how he gets the movement on the airbender. So I you know, if the Cardinals stumble, I think that's the real thing. The Brewers, I think, will be a solid team. That'll be above 500, high 80s, but they're going to need something to happen with the Cardinals, I think, to kind of go any further.
Yeah. The bullpen's a great point, because keep in mind, they were like flying last year. Then the front office trades Josh Hader to San Diego, and all of a sudden they go belly up, right? So I think they're not as deep as they've been in years past in that bullpen. I mean, if you're not going to have this great offense that's going to compete with the Cardinals, I totally agree with everything Katie said in going head to head, you know, looking at those slots, then you better have like a ridiculous bullpen, right? So you can win these games 1-0, 2-1. But they just don't have that depth, I feel like, that, you know, the Brewers traditionally have had. So I just don't see how, unless the Cardinals have a rash of injuries, which, you know, not something that's totally out of the realm because they have had a lot of trouble with some of their bigger stars staying healthy. But I don't see how the Brewers on paper right now overcome the Cardinals. I think they win the division if everything is equal by 5-6 games.
One thing that sticks out for me is I think the league has maybe caught up to some of their pitching aspects. They really were able to kind of identify relievers and back end starters that they could really do well on. And they've gotten a lot more out of Eric Lauer than I thought any team would. But at the same time, like, their big pickup this year is Wade Miley. He just seems like a, you know, decent backup acquisition. So like a sort of back end acquisition. So I think the league is sort of caught up to them on a little bit when it comes to pitching. And then they just haven't had developed a hitter, you know, like we're waiting for them to develop a hitter. Bryce Turang, if he could, develop some power, would be a great addition to this team. If Garrett Mitchell continues to get the ball off the ground and maybe make a little bit more contact, he could be good. Tyrone Taylor got hurt and was maybe one of the best hitters they've developed recently. So, you know, if you look at this team, like, all of their best hitters came from other organizations. And, you know, yes, they've developed some talent to go be able to go get those in trades. But at the same time, I'm still waiting on them to develop their own hitters, which is weird because that park is like helpful to hitters. You know, it's not, yeah. It's not like saying Oakland can't develop their own hitters. So, you know, I think you guys are right about the Brewers. They need a Cardinal stumble. So will the Cardinals stumble? You know, the Cardinals are next up on our list. And it's just fate that you get thrown that question first, Katie.
Will the Cardinals stumble?
No, I'm sure this answer will make you super popular in the clubhouse. I think you should go real negative on this one.
Yeah, let's see. I already bailed on them the last week to do WBC stuff, so I'm going to show up like I own the place for opening day. No, you know, this is – I understand the NL Central is not the most competitive division, but I think that they're – and I know this is going to get the eye rolls of about 29 other fan bases, so please bear with me. I think the Cardinals are coming in a little bit underrated. I do agree that the Brewers are probably a playoff team. I still don't think they're going to win the division, but the Cardinals, when you look at their lineup and you look at if everyone is healthy, their 2 through 6 hitters are Tyler O'Neill, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, Wilson Contreras, and either Lars Nootbaar or Jordan Walker, potentially. Mm-hmm. And that's a really meaty, heartier lineup. I think the Cardinals are in a really good spot for the first time in a while in terms of finding continuous power. They've done a great job in developing talent. I mean, I'm sure we'll get to Jordan Walker and the case that he's making to make the opening day roster. But I think if the Cardinals do stumble at all, it's going to come from starting pitching. And I know that's not exactly a groundbreaking kind of idea here, but you look at their rotation and there's no denying the Cardinals are banking a lot on Jack Flaherty again. And that's something that you're comfortable doing in 2022 or 2020 and even 2021. And in 2021, he really lived up to that before that freak oblique injury. And he's just never been the same since. This is a walk year for Jack Flaherty. He's in his final year before he's eligible for free agency. He is the guy, if you're going to look at those five guys, and him, Adam Wainwright, Miles Michaelis, Jordan Montgomery, and Steven Matz, that could be that ace. However, there's a lot of maybe question marks after him as well. You want to see if Jordan Montgomery, the guy that they pledged $10 million towards in arbitration this year, can pick up. I mean, he really kind of saved their season in the second half. Miles Michaelis, one of the most consistent pitchers in the National League last year. There doesn't seem to be too much worry about him. He didn't miss a start last year, despite coming off back-to-back injury years. Steven Matz looked good in 2022 when he was able to take the ball. It's just a matter of if he was able to take the ball and staying healthy. And then, you know, there's Adam Wainwright back for a final year. Velocity hasn't looked great in his opening spring. And to me, that's kind of the main concern for the rotation there. So the Cardinals have a lot going for them in terms of depth. For the first time in a while, it seems like they have considerable favorable options if something does go wrong with their projected starters. But it's a long season, and they cannot afford to have guys like Goldschmidt, Arenado, Contreras, O'Neill, and Flaherty underperform.
Yeah, I mean, Katie, I mean, what am I going to say that the beat writer for the Cardinals didn't hit on, right? Basically, I think she's right. The lineup is stacked. There's no comparing them to anyone else in the division. But if we look beyond this now, and she hit the nail on the head with the starting rotation, That to me, I mean, a rotation that's still relying heavily on a 41-year-old Adam Wainwright is a rotation that kind of has some weaknesses, right? I mean, you look at that rotation, who strikes fear into the hearts of the opponents? Let's say they get to the postseason and they play the Mets. Who's lining up with Verlander and Scherzer, right? Like, I think, you know, the best case scenario, the Cardinals go into the trade deadline and add a starter, because I agree. I think they're probably going to run away with this division as long as they stay healthy, because their lineup is just full of above average guys at pretty much every position, it seems like. I think they're going to score a lot of runs, but this rotation is just okay. You know, the lineup's going to have to cover for, I think, a lot of the pitching woes, and I think they can do it. I think they're equipped to do it. I don't know if I think the Cardinals are underrated, Katie, in any facet. I don't think they're ever underrated. I hope that's possible. You know, but I do think this is a very solid team. This is a good team that got even better in the offseason. And, you know, that can't be said for everybody, certainly not everybody in this division.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, let's say you're not sure what's going on at second. They've got Nolan Gorman, you know, if Brendan Donovan doesn't work out. And, oh, hey, look, Brendan Donovan is pulling jacks right now in spring, too. So, and seems to be have learned this pull fly ball approach from the Cardinals that they were, you know, number one in baseball with last year. So, you know, and then, you know, if you think they need a little more length in the lineup, well, here Jordan Walker is just looks like maybe the top prospect in baseball. So, yeah, the lineup is great. But it's, you know, there's that meme with the three dragons, and it's like, you know, the Cardinals lineup, you know, I would even say the Cardinals bullpen is the other nice, mean looking dragon. And then it's like Cardinal starting rotation with the googly eyes. And they're doing their best to make the most out of a low strikeout rate. And they've had good ERAs versus bad strikeout rates in the past. But I just wonder the interaction between the new shift rules and the third worst projected strikeout rate in baseball, how those two things are going to interact and what will happen, frankly, if Wainwright is hurt. He's, you know, Wainwright's not even 100%, right? I mean, that's what I'm reading sort of from the velo readings. Who is, you know, and I kind of got some pushback from you. I saw you in camp and I didn't want to say it too loud, but I was like, I don't see anybody in the minors kind of stepping up or anybody that's in the depth portion of the depth chart sort of stepping up. But I think you said that you had liked a couple of the guys. You said a couple of the younger guys might be able to step forward. Was it Thompson? Who did you like that was that might be able to step in if Wainwright's hurt and give them at least depth, if not sort of top end talent?
Yeah, there's a couple guys there, but it's really going to drive this point forward. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day who asked me to name the top two pitchers in the Cardinals rotation. And I started and I was like, well, and he cut me off right there and he goes, that's a problem.
Yeah, one or two,
that rotation is not good enough. And I was like, okay, point taken.
And
you're right.
Would you think that any of these young guys that might come up, they don't really necessarily seem to have that, like, they're not like top prospect in baseball. It's not like they have a Grayson Rodriguez that's like waiting and they can just like give them a little bit of time and then, oh, look, it's September and we have an ace, you know, it's more like they have other guys that can be okay.
Exactly. So these guys in terms of depth aren't necessarily going to fill that 1-2 role either. Zach Thompson has had a really good spring, but he's going to be used as a reliever from the left side. There's guys like Jake Woodford, who the Cardinals didn't really use him much last year, even when they were desperate for starting pitching help, because they wanted him to work on the pitch shape of his slider. And he's come back with a brand new arsenal. Velo is up. He's looked really good in their sixth starter role. There is hope that they can find some consistency in Dakota Hudson. You know, he's a year removed from Tommy John now, about to enter a second season since that surgery. And their hope is there, you know, he's able to find more consistency and avoid the three ball counts. And then there's Matthew Liberatore, a prospect of theirs. They're still pretty high on. Same message, though, finding consistency. So if there's a falter in this rotation, the good news is the Cardinals have depth in their system, which they did not. I remember in 2021, they literally had a two-man rotation, and it was very hard to watch. They were just trying to find anyone that could throw innings. But this year, it seems like if something does go down with those projected five starters, they have reliable support, but it is not one of those top of the rotation arms.
They don't. I wonder if they have the stomach also to trade somebody like Nolan Gorman for a top end talent, or if it's going to be more plug and play. Then they had the opportunity to trade someone like Nolan Gorman for someone maybe more of ace like quality than Jordan Montgomery. Instead, they went with trading 1 year of Bader for 1 year of Montgomery. sort of kicking the can down the road, because it's not like they have a solution in place that's for next year. That's just like whatever we need to do to get through this year. The good news is that that lineup is formidable. I like the bullpen. Helsley, Gallegos are great. Are you seeing anything from Hicks in terms of health this offseason? I think that could be a really good way to sort of shore up the middle of that bullpen.
Yeah, Jordan Hicks looks great. He told me he was working on really developing and landing that slider. He's a two-pitch mix guy, and you can get away with that when you throw 102 miles per hour, as Hicks does, with a 90-mile-per-hour slider. So for Hicks, it's just less of us staying healthy at this point and more of can he find that consistency in landing the slider. Cardinals have a bunch of sneaky good relief arms in their system. It's a common problem they're having is which left-handed relievers are going to take. They threw four today in the first four innings of their spring training game against Houston, just in an attempt to, okay, here are four relievers, all with options against the, you know, in spring training, you play your best players for the first five or six innings and they all leave. So they were like, let's put our four left-handed relievers that are all in competition for one spot and see what happened. And they threw four perfect innings. So a lot going on for those Cardinals
starters. So that's, mm-hmm. that's pretty good. And they all have options. I mean, having options at the back end of your bullpen is huge. You got to be able to, even with the new option rules, you got to be able to send them down, you know, if they're overworked, to give them rest and come back up. So that is very nice for the Cardinals.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
But then we've got the Cubs. And with the Cubs, you know, I think the big question is, can they make this a three-team race? Like, is there anything there for the Cubs that needs that could go right, that could put them in this mix? Because it seems gettable. I mean, just by the projections, you've got the Cardinals with 88, and you've got the Brewers with 84, and you've got the Cubs with 75. That's not super exciting from a projection standpoint, but it does make you wonder. So what do you think, Britt? Do you think that the Cubs, what would go right? What's the story that the Cubs can tell where these things coalesce and they make it a three-team race in this division?
Gosh, I mean, all the old guys that they signed have to kind of turn back the clock. you know, if you're looking at the Cubs, and I was at Cubs camp about 10 days ago out in Arizona, and to me, what's so puzzling about them, guys, is they're in a very winnable division. And instead of kind of going all the way, because they're the Chicago Cubs, they've got a huge fan base, a big market, an iconic Wrigley Field. You know, fans that are going to go pack that place no matter what, that are just looking for a little hope. And they just kind of go halfway, right? They just sign a whole bunch of old guys, like I said, who've got experience, who, you know, on paper, it looks okay, but to me, Dansby Swanson was a huge overpay. He's the fourth best shortstop in that class. If it wasn't such a big shortstop class, they wouldn't even have gotten a shortstop. Now, they really wanted Xander Bogaerts, but just didn't want to pay him, which is really kind of the story of the Chicago Cubs the last couple of years, right? Acting like a small market team. They go, they get Eric Hosmer this year, they get Mancini. You know, obviously, Seiya Suzuki is going to play a key role as well. He's dealing with, you know, the day I was there, it was, you know, he was dealing with the oblique injury. So that was a big deal. When will he be ready? Maybe opening day, probably not. Obliques are pesky. Something that's in that moderate range could take a little bit of time. But I think what the Cubs have done is kind of bare minimum here. They're going to probably, in my mind, be that third place team. And I don't know, barring, like we said, a rash of injuries for the Cardinals. And then for the Brewers, do they also get hurt? Does everyone underperform? I think a lot of like dominoes have to fall for us to look and say, hey, here come the Cubs, you know? I mean, I think when you look at what they did, Take, for example, Jameson Taillon, right? They add him. He's fine, but they don't have any frontline starters. They don't have the Cardinals lineup. They also don't have the frontline starters. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's fine. He was the Yankees' fourth best pitcher, though. So now he's going to be the Cubs' one, two. I just don't think that they spent money and they acquired a lot of guys. There's a lot of new faces, but nothing in there really makes you say, that's it, that's it. I just don't think the sum of their parts is anything to write home about. Sorry, Cubs fans. I feel like I just totally crushed them.
Well, no, I think I agree with you, but it's kind of incredible. They spent $250 million.
Yes, on what? It's like that person, like, Katie, it's like that person who, like, goes and buys, like, this one sweater that, like, isn't even that nice, isn't designer, and, you know, it's $500, and you're like, that's all you got?
Right. And you're like, you don't want to say it, but everyone's thinking, yeah. Right? Like, seriously?
Yeah. You're like, that's not like a staple piece, man. You're going to wear that one time.
I'm not going to turn your whole wardrobe around.
No, it's just so weird. I don't know what they're doing. This is like the window where, like, the Reds are going to be good someday. They're up and coming. We'll talk about them later. The Pirates also should be better, right? They may finish ahead of the Reds this year, which is like party time in Pittsburgh. You know, they're on the up and up. So this is like the window where, like we talked about the Brewers, they're good. There's holes. This is the time to compete, and the Cubs just continuously kind of like act like they're in it without going all the way in it. You're the Chicago Cubs. Go do what the Mets are doing. Go do what the Padres are doing. I don't understand.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of a financial situation where I don't want to make excuses for them, but they were switching over to their own TV station during COVID, and maybe they took it harder. I mean, that's what they've sort of stated publicly, is they took it harder than other people. But
they also got Wrigley Field as a landmark, which means they're going to save a ton of money, like in taxes and all these other.
Oh, it's a Wrigley landmark, Field is, and then
a landmark.
When it is when you have a landmark park like that, there's just a high floor for games. Like, maybe there's just a sort of settling and saying, hey, if we're a near 500 team, we're still going to get the same amount of fans than if we spend more and get more people in here. Because I've been to plenty of games when the Cubs aren't good and there's still everybody there, you know, drinking old style and having a good time. So, you know, I when I look at this, I hate to think too much about a player development, but like, I always kind of look at the young players. They're the team. They're the ones that make them able to spend more on free agents because they're cheaper when they're there. And I see some good players, but I kind of see the same story where it's like, okay, you got Nico Horner, you got Ian Happ, you got Justin Steele, you developed some guys, but they haven't like sort of developed a superstar. And that would make things all different. If Nico Horner was the, you know, one of the best, they wouldn't even sign Dansby Swanson. If Nico Horner was one of the best shortstops in baseball, you know what I mean? And that's what I'm looking for. What is it that you think the Cubs need, Katie? Like, what is it that they're missing? Because they seem to, like, they went and got a pitcher. They needed a pitcher. They went and, you know, they've gone and gotten all the pieces they've gotten. But for some reason, we don't like the fit all the way.
I think they need depth. You know, I'm not as bullish on the moves. I do think that there are some that make sense. Like, I think the Cody Bellinger, it's a gamble, but it's fine. It's risky. It's 1 year. So at the end of the day, are you blowing the bank over that? No, not really. He essentially signed for what, the AAV? I like Trey Mancini there. I like Jameson Taillon, but again, I agree with Britt. Is like, is it really enough? Because you spend all this money, Dansby Swanson, of course, that's something to get the fans excited about. I like that if I'm the Cubs fans and I see the front office is spending money and I'm like, oh, great. These are names I know. These are names that, like, I'm excited. Eric Hosmer is a Cub, like, because you know those names. And then you look at Eric Hosmer's production over the last 3 years and you're like, oh, yeah. Okay. So for me, it's a little half and half. I think that it's great that they spent money and gave their fans something to be excited about come opening day, because I saw that roster at the end of 2022. It was not great. But that roster in 2022 is what their depth looks like. So they patched holes, yes. There's still, if something goes wrong for any of those couple of players, they're in the same position that they were in at the end of last season, and they're out $250 million, right? So I think for the Cubs, if they really want to bridge that gap between, you know, from third place, probably a considerable third place, to maybe competing for a playoff spot, there just has to be better depth in the organization.
Yeah. And that depth is going to come from some like development a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's sort of what I was pointing at. You know, if I'm going to tell the story of the Cubs being good this year, I'm going to try. Here it is. Christopher Morel stopped striking out so much. That's all he needs to do. He's an athlete who can play all over. They'll find a place for him. So he basically replaces Patrick Wisdom at third, who strikes out all the time. And Jeremiah Estrada becomes their closer or their setup guy, along with Fulmer and Merriweather, and they have a really good bullpen. Hayden Wisnensky becomes their number two or number one even. I think he might have that upside. So it's, you know, I always point to the young guys, and those young guys, Nico Horner could take another step forward with power. And if he does, he could really join that sort of 3-4 win all-star type player. There is that in him. Suzuki has that bounce back and finally does what we think he can do. All those things can happen. The problem when you start telling stories like that, I think, is, yeah, but then all the poop happens too. You know, it's like, yeah. While that stuff is happening that you're discussing, yeah, Swanson got hurt. You know what I mean?
Mancini. I just think the age of them too, the age of the acquisitions kind of doesn't bother me, but I wonder, right? Like you guys were saying with the development and the depth, it'd almost be better to let those young guys come up and supplement them with younger free agents so they can kind of the next 3 to 5 years be a group, right? It seems like they got guys who like are on the outs.
But they waited. They waited for a while. That's why I almost think it's a fair player development. They waited for a while, right? They were rebuilding. This is the result of the rebuilding.
It's so weird, but like they've got all these young guys who are just like meh. Like if you have these awesome young guys,
I like Nico.
I think he could be good, but if you really believe he's part of the future, like sign him now, get in that extension now to keep him build around.
And
him,
it's right? He's not quite. I mean, he's probably not quite as exciting as a lot of other players, a lot of other teams' best prospect, you know, like maybe we'll see. It's a little bit more like I think he could take another step. So but this is the result of the rebuild. They started building, they started adding to their rebuild, but I think it's a little bit of a lesson that not every team that does the tank rebuild like the Astros, the Astros did that at one point, the Orioles did it, and they seem to be coming out of it pretty nicely with a lot of nice pieces, but not every team that does it. The Tigers did it. And we're looking at that rebuild and being like, where are your building blocks? Maybe Torkelson, maybe these guys, you know, maybes they're there, but you're not like, oh, we got Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, you know, like, you know, they don't quite have that going for them. So, you know, not every tanking makes sense, I think is one of the lessons here. And then we'll have to see how it fits together. At least when you do try and you do put these guys together, you have credible major leaguers at every spot. And you even have some credible major leaguers that could take a step forward in Nico and Morel. And, you know, I do think that there is a story here where the Cubs push, but I think it mostly has to do with maybe their starting pitching kind of coming back and being better than we think. You know, maybe Smiley just has 130-140 innings in him of just great ball. Stroman stays healthy. I think Tyon has another level. He's added a sweeper. Everyone's adding a sweeper. It's super exciting.
It's spring training. Everyone's working on something.
Everyone's got a new pitch. That's true. But I was just talking to Clark Schmidt in the Yankees camp, and he was like, yeah, Tyon's been texting me pictures of his sweeper. Well, yeah, I guess there's other worse things they could be texting each other.
Yeah, no, you're right. Right. You're gonna need a lot of overperforming and then underperforming by the Brewers and the Cardinals if you're gonna really write the Cubs story, right?
But they are trending, I think, in the right direction. They're definitely in a much better spot than wherever they were at the All-Star break in 2022.
This is that's fair. I just was expecting more from them watching some of these other teams. Like, oh, they're gonna spend money this winter, and then you kind of look and you're like, oh.
They got the oldest shortstop who kind of was coming off his career year. They got a 30-year-old corner infielder that has been 5% better than league average the last 2 years in Mancini. So
that's super not nice guy.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily what the market is trying to, you know, corner, you know. And then and then they got sort of a mid-rotation pitcher. It's just maybe money doesn't buy you what you're looking for. I was looking at the Red Sox, not to go off script anymore, but I was looking at the Red Sox. They're spending $230 million on that team this year. So you can't say that the Red Sox didn't spend money. It's just it doesn't fit right, you know?
We know how we feel about the Red Sox.
Yeah.
We did that episode.
I missed the AL East one, but some puzzling, maybe that's the story, like the most puzzling spenders of the winter. I don't understand some of the plays. But
at least they'll be a little bit inured from the whole Bally's thing. They got their own TV session. But we go on to the next team, and now we enter the sort of backwaters of the NL Central. Gosh, that's rude. Way to be rude, you know, but I don't know how else to describe the Pirates and Reds that we're headed into, but here we go with the Pirates. And I don't think that it makes a lot of sense to debate how, well, okay, what's the high watermark for their wins this year? Throw out a number, anybody. What do you think?
Oh, could they win 70 games?
Ouch. Sure.
They're in a week.
They're projected for 72. Come on. Let's push it north. Let's go. Somebody.
It's an auction.
It's an auction. Somebody give me 35. 75.
Here's the problem. Here's my question. Here's my question, though. Does Brian Reynolds stay on the team? Because that impacts it. Could they have a nice first half? Are they still in sell peace mode? Or are they in, no, we're going to keep our players?
Does it matter what O'Neill Cruz does to Brian Reynolds? Like if O'Neill Cruz,
those are their two best players.
But if O'Neill Cruz becomes Aaron Judge at shortstop, which there's like at least a 10 to 15, maybe even 20% chance he does, because he hits the ball as hard as Judge, right? So if you got O'Neill Cruz, you got Aaron Judge at shortstop, does Brian Reynolds stay?
I think he stays if they
play it out. That's how jobs work.
That's his main thing, right? I think, didn't he say he was open to an extension with the Pirates if they paid him the money? So to me, it's a little less indicative of, you know, what are the other pieces going to do? Because the Pirates do have some nice up and coming pieces. Like, it's not easy to be a Pirates fan right now, but at least you can like look out to the horizon and see like, okay, it's coming. But for keeping Brian Reynolds, if they would like to build around him, they're obviously going to have to offer him an extension.
Yeah.
I know, but he's I mean, he's under team control for the 2026. So.
But wasn't he like really put off by what they did offer him?
He was.
In negotiations,
and,
right?
And the reason we know these things is we know he's unhappy because we know these things, right? Like, he wouldn't have been leaked to the press if he was happy. So he's unhappy, and we know this, and that must mean something. So,
I mean,
that's why I think, like, maybe if, like, you're like, oh my God, I could play next to that guy, maybe I'll just shut up and play till free agency.
I think you need to get paid. And I agree with Katie. I think the future is bright for them. The issue is, though, the future has been bright for Pittsburgh many, many times before. It hasn't panned out, right? It seems like every good player in baseball was at one time a Pittsburgh Pirate.
Well, the good news for the Pirates, right?
Oh, I feel that as being based in Oakland, near Oakland.
Yeah. Like a feeder team. But I think they also have like five of the top 100 prospects right now, too. In addition to like the guys who are already up, there's like another wave coming. So they're going to be like watchable.
I think they're getting closer and closer. I mean, I see a form. I see something forming that has the potential to be better than like what we're talking about with the Cubs, right? In terms of young players that are good. And, you know, I like Brian Hayes a lot. He hits the ball hard. He just hasn't been able to lift it. You know, that we've heard that from other players, but it still can be with that defensive profile that he has. It can still be really good. That's got to be at least as good as Nico Horner, if not a little bit better. O'Neill Cruz has the most upside of any of the two teams between the Pirates and the Cubs. And then you've got a solid everyday guy in Brian Reynolds that's under team contract for a while. And I think Mitch Keller is stepping a little bit into the limelight here. He's now got six pitches, averages 96 miles an hour. Yeah, he doesn't have great command, but he does have the pieces to maybe be an ace. And behind him, you've got Roansy Contreras and Luis Ortiz, two really exciting young players. Behind him, you got Michael Burrows, who's one of the better pitching prospects in Major League Baseball. So I agree with you that there's like this sort of this, there's a wave cresting now, and there's a little bit of a wave coming behind it. Andy Rodriguez, the guy that just sent down, is a really exciting prospect as a catcher. And it's so nice to have you know, a strong catcher as your prospect, because if you can get offense for that position and it's cheap and he's a really good game caller and everything, sort of brings everything together. And then some people think their best prospect is Tamar Johnson. Yeah, that's it. Tamar Johnson, who's a, you know, there's a little bit divisive because he's not a big guy. He's kind of a little guy. He's kind of second baseman. People are like, is there power there? How can that be your best prospect? I think Andy Rodriguez is their best prospect. So we've got all these players together. So if I'm not going to auction you guys to anything higher than 76 wins this year, when do they cross over into over 500? When is their ETA? When do you think they kind of put this together?
I think it also depends on the teams in their division. We've talked about it. This NL Central is not competitive. It's like the Cardinals and Brewers every single year. The Cardinals have a big problem on their hands in that they only have one pitcher signed after 2023 currently, and that's Steven Matz. You can't roll out Steven Matz every single day. So
you can't even do it every 5 days. I'm sorry.
You couldn't. it depends, right? We're going to get to the Reds. The Reds are rising up too. I mean, it's going to be a little bit for them. But what are the Brewers going to look like in 2025? What are the Cubs going to look like? The Cardinals have never really historically tanked, but I think you're seeing the peak Cardinals right now. So I would guess a good estimate of contention for the Pirates when you look at their upcoming minor league talent, their prospect, their farm system, I would say end of 2024, early 2025, but that window can be extended or accelerated based on their competition in the division.
Yeah, and it's also going to come down to ownership too, because these teams can build from within and build from within and build from within. You still need those one or two pieces on the free agent market. And, you know, is Pittsburgh going to go out and do that? Now, we didn't mention that they got Andrew McCutchen back, which is a big fan favorite. So I don't know if they're trying to, you know, get butts in the seats, sell more tickets with someone like that. But, you know, I do think they're going to need to be active in free agency at some point in time. I mean, are they going to go on this crazy spending spree? Probably not, based on what we know historically from that ownership group. But you still have to go out and supplement, right? You can grow all these prospects.
Wait. They did, though.
What's their big
move? G-Man Choi, Carlos Santana. No, I know. I'm being a little bit facetious.
Okay. I do like your point about Mitch Keller, because I think if you look at his body of work last year, you're like, God, this guy really struggled. But honestly, he really turned it around. He had a pretty miserable start to the season. But if you look like more closely at those numbers like parceled out, he actually finished really strong. So I think that's really encouraging for them. I think they're on the up and up. It wouldn't shock me if they make the postseason before the Cubs do, because I kind of think they're like cresting up. And if they do add the right pieces, maybe they stumble in, like Katie said, maybe they're a wild card team with the extra postseason teams by next year, right? It wouldn't be that crazy. I think betting on the youth, as long as their development is okay, that's going to be the huge part of these rebuilds, whether they work or don't work. Because are these guys going to be developed at the big league level? Are they going to get better? Or are they just going to be these flashy prospects that they trade away because they aren't able to kind of do anything with them, right? That's going to be, to me, the big test with the Pirates. But I agree with Katie on the timeline. I think it could come sooner rather than later. And in some aspects, I think they're better off than some other teams in the division like Chicago.
Yeah, I think it's tough to figure it all out. I think the one thing that I like about those, and we were kind of joking, I was just joking with you.
What did I miss when I was on maternity leave?
No, but what I like about them is, you know, there's lefties that hit into the shift, Choi and Santana. You know, so there's a little minor bet there that they'll be better without the shift rules. And, you know, Kutch, from all accounts, decided to take the same deal that he could have gotten somewhere with more of a contender to come home. So that's a bit of a homecoming. But none of those guys are going to stand in the way of anybody for long if somebody steps up. You know what I mean? They didn't hand $177 million to a shortstop and then have to sort of figure out where he goes. Like, what if they decide next year that Dansby Swanson is not the shortstop and they're not sure Nico Horner is the shortstop either? Do they have to go sign another shortstop? You know what I mean? There's a little bit more. What the Cubs did blocks a little bit more than what the Pirates did, which is the Pirates are still ready for business. If Jack Suwinski comes up and is great, then they can find room for him. You know, Andrew McCutchen's not going to stop him. Maybe Kutch goes to DH and they release Santana. I mean, that's on the table, right? All these guys are on 1 year deals. G-Man Choi was, you know, they can, it's the guy they can release, or the phantom DL is always there for guys at the end of their careers. So, you know, I think that, you know, this team is just sort of waiting for maybe one or two more pieces. And I think when I just look at this team, it's all on Cruz. And I know that no team is one player, but when you've got someone with this much upside, if he's just okay, it just changes the whole trajectory of the team, I think. So I think if there's one person in baseball that I'm watching this year that I think could change the trajectory of an entire franchise, am I being crazy? Am I like going over the top on this? This sounds to me a little bit like the sort of hot takes that you hear on the radio and stuff. Yeah,
you're being a little crazy because there's this guy named Mike Trout who plays in.
Oh God, that you just cut me in pieces. One name. That's a good point.
Who has, and also he's joined by this other pretty good player whose name is right. Shohei Ohtani.
That's true. Well, which is why we talk about depth and player development on our show, right?
You know, like it's not like, hey, let's sign LeBron. This isn't the NBA, right? This isn't the NFL where it's like we have a quarterback, we have a chance.
Yeah.
I agree with you that he's an exciting player, but you might be a little strong with him changing the trajectory of the entire thing. Because if Trout and Ohtani can't get the Angels to the playoffs.
In any of your sort of late August half asleep games, Katie, did you catch any younger Pirates that you were excited about other than O'Neill Cruz?
No. And look, in all fairness, the last time I saw the Pirates, the Cardinals played them six straight times, three in St. Louis, three in Pittsburgh to end the season. The Cardinals had already clinched, and it was a very much mail it in week for both teams. So I don't think it's necessarily fair to judge any of the talent there from what I saw at the last week. But I will go back to my previous point that I do think they're on the rise. They have a ton of talent. O'Neill Cruz is he's really impressed me. And I mean, I see him a lot. I won't see him as much this season with the division or the schedule changing, but he's someone that if I see batting and I'm at sports bar or something and he's up to the plate, I'm like, stop, let's watch this. So Pirates do have that going for him. And also, who doesn't like a good feel-good story? Andrew McCutchen going back to where it all started. That was honestly, even though it's not going to change anything in the standings, probably my favorite signing of the offseason.
Yeah, and he's been I was in Bradenton for a little bit, and it was loud, you know, they love him, and in fact, did you see they caused him a batter's infraction because they were basically doing a standing ovation, and he was kind of like yeah, and then the umpire and the catcher were standing up and didn't look ready either, but the umpire's like, ball one, you didn't get
oh my
in
gosh
there.
The Cardinals are in trouble. I just put two and two together. With all those standing ovations they get, they're in trouble.
you got to be careful. And the catcher can deke you out. You know, the catcher can be like, it doesn't have to be in a stance. And if the umpire looks like he's enjoying it, he's counting. He's looking at the clock. So that is something to think about.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
But now we get to the last team in our division. I don't know if they're the last team in our hearts, but the Cincinnati Reds are probably going to be last when we sum up the wins this year. Let's start with a timeline. We had a timeline for the Pirates and we thought it might be in the next year or two. What do you think is the timeline here, Britt, for the Reds? How long till the Reds are more relevant?
I think they're maybe a year behind the Pirates. I think you look at some of that young pitching, Hunter Green, Ashcroft, is it Graham, right? Graham Ashcroft. And then Nick Lodolo.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be, you made the joke before and then I said that's not right, but these three guys are going to be the centerpiece of Cincinnati starting pitching, right? If these guys can develop into what they think, the Reds are going to be good maybe as soon as 2025. I think when you're banking on a young starting pitching rotation, there's so many question marks. I mean, last spring I went and saw the Tigers and they were banking on young starting unproven starting pitching for the most part, and obviously, it was a catastrophe.
And you fell for it a little bit.
I totally did. I wrote this great story. I think everyone else thought I should know that I'm wrong a lot. Maybe the Cubs will win the World Series.
That's baseball. That's baseball. Anybody who claims they're not wrong a lot in baseball,
Yeah, but I did. I totally fell for it. I mean, I think Hinch is a great manager. And I thought, you looked at how the Tigers had turned it around in the second half of the previous season. They had all the makings, a couple veterans. They had all the makings of this turnaround team, right? But the problem is, and I saw this in Baltimore too, they tried to kind of hitch their cart to young starting pitching and they all failed. They had this group of Jake Arrieta and, Brad Bergeson and Brian Mattis and Zach Britton. And, none of these guys, Chris Tillman had a couple good years. Zach Britton, they moved to the bullpen and he obviously became a terrific reliever. Jake Arrieta had to go to Chicago to have, really maximize his talent to win the Cy Young and all of that. But, there is an inherent danger in having your rebuild live and die off the young starting pitching. And it makes it a little bit more difficult, I think, to kind of say this team is going to be good then. I think they're going to take their lumps. There's going to be times when you're really is this headed in the right direction? But for the Reds, it has to be, because there was nowhere else to go. I mean, they bottomed out. They cleared payroll. They got rid of basically everyone not named Joey Votto, and who, by the way, thinks that aliens are going to help the Reds win the World Series. Did you guys see that? So what do we know? We
should just that was a bold that prediction. That made me... Yeah, his bold prediction was that somehow aliens made it. Oh, aliens were friendly and we had to interact with them, but there was no baseball in between. And the Reds won a 6-week season and steamrolled through the playoffs. Yeah. So,
and won the World Series.
Joey Votto knows how much needs to go wrong in the world for the Reds to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
No, that's actually more likely than making the playoffs, right?
Yeah. They're just far behind. I mean, what were they last year? What did they start off? 0 and what? Or 1 and what? That first month of the season?
They won three games in April.
Yeah.
It was bad enough where I actually got pulled off a trip to Cincinnati because I was told we need to save our money for later in the season. And I was like, all right, we're already mailing it in on a couple teams right now. It's April. All right.
Amazing.
Sometimes you know in April.
Sometimes you know in March.
Yeah. I think Jonathan India will bounce back. I think Will Myers was a decent acquisition. But I also think that if those two things happen, they might just be as likely to be traded as to stay in Cincinnati. I think if Joey Votto shows something coming back from labrum surgery at 39, which is tough, he's in a walk year. I don't know. I wonder, do you think that Joey Votto would accept a trade to a contender at this point of his career, as having always been a Cincinnati Red?
Well, when was the last time that he really was in contention? Was it 2012? That was over a decade ago.
2 years ago, they almost made the playoffs, and it feels like a lifetime ago.
Oh, but you're right.
It was only 2 years ago. It feels like 10.
That's crazy.
I know.
That's when they spent a little bit really quickly. They got Mike Moustakas.
That was the COVID year.
Are you talking about the COVID year?
I think so, yeah. Was it 2020? Yeah. I think that was the year where they almost made the playoffs. Or was it 19?
In 2020, they were third and lost, and they made the playoffs. They lost
but
that.
They had a very they had big expanded playoffs, right?
Yeah, they had the big expanded playoffs, and they made it. And they had Trevor Bauer won the Cy Young, and they lost to the Braves 2-0 in the NL wild card.
Because
were the Reds the team that ever scored a run?
Oh.
Yeah, I think
they were the team that didn't score a run in the postseason.
I think she's right. They got steamrolled.
And that's not great. They also made the postseason by going 31-29, which is, I think, why Joey Votto said if we have a 6-week season, we have a chance. But that was interesting, because I think when you look at, I think that's when we were talking about the Pirates and how we add, you guys were pointing this up, like how do they add to it? It's super important, because the Reds did have some pieces, and they had some pieces, and then they added to it, and they just added the wrong pieces, it seems.
Yeah.
And so maybe there's a lesson there for him. I kind of think that Joey Votto might do it. He's kind of a YOLO guy. That's the impression I get from
Joey
him.
Joey Votto, that's a good description. Big YOLO guy for Joey Votto.
If he's like, this will be fun and crazy, and the Reds are like, we'll save $1 million, then I think it happens. But he has to show something first, because there's not a lot of demand for first base DH types at 39. So he has to come back off of a pretty tough injury to the shoulder and show something. But and India could show something and get traded. Myers could show something. I really like Ellie De La Cruz. I don't know how much you guys know about Ellie De La Cruz, Nuelvi Marte, and some of their guys that are coming up. But, is there a position player? What do you generally think of, prospects like Ellie De La Cruz that are like huge power, but lots of strikeouts and lots of walks? I don't know if Nolan Gorman is a little bit along those lines, where it's like, this could go either way. Maybe even O'Neill Cruz is a little bit like that, where it's like this huge upside, but it may not happen. What does that make you think of when you look at Ellie Cruz and the Reds?
I mean, I think that's kind of just the trend in baseball development, especially for power, right? We see that a lot. Oh, this guy can mash the ball. He's going to give us 30 home runs. He's also going to strike out a third of the time. We're going to take it. I know that baseball is somewhat, depending on the organization, shifting away from the two true outcome approach, but a lot of organizations are not, and you're going to see a lot of value, especially with that young promising power. That's just too alluring and too exciting for a lot of farm systems to be like, nope, we're going to go back to contact rates, we're going to go back to hitting for average. You don't see that a lot, so it's less of a red flag for me now. I think power plays a significant amount in the in baseball. I mean, with Gorman himself, that's a guy who could probably hit about 25 to 30 home runs from the left side, and he's going to strike out a lot. But it got to a point where this is the biggest danger with power prospects. That power has to come. You can't, it sounds obvious, but you can't just have that high strikeout rate and eventually attribute it to, oh, he's going to figure himself out. The thing with guys with promised power and high strikeout rates is if you don't deliver on that promised power, your strikeout rate is going, it's going to be borderline useless to have you in the, in the lineup. So that's my only concern when I see power prospects. We've seen a ton pan out. And also as hitters mature, they become a little bit more well-rounded. But for these young guys, it's a little risky for me to focus just on power, because the strikeout rate as they adapt to the big league level is almost certainly going to go higher.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, keep in mind, we've also seen busts because there's no bigger jump in sports than AAA to the big leagues, right? So I think it comes down to a couple things. The guy has to be willing to adjust. Now look at Aaron Judge's swing like 5 years ago, right? Like Aaron Judge has become like this perfect hitter because he's not just a power hitter. He's also a guy that hits for average. He's also a guy that gets on base. Does that become something that guys emulate? Does the game start to shift where we're seeing guys, who have that power, but have a little bit of the ability to do other things, especially now that they're getting rid of the shift. I think that's something to keep in mind. But when you talk to like talent evaluators and things like that, Katie's right. I mean, it comes down to, is that swing going to be able to translate to the high velocity at the big leagues where everyone coming out of that bullpen is throwing upper 90s now, right? Like, I can't tell you how many guys come up from AAA and they're like, you know, that is a foul tip in the minor leagues. It's strike three up here. I mean, the jump is huge, and it's such a tiny little margin for error once they're in the big leagues. They are facing such better pitching every single day than they are at the AAA level. So it really comes down to being able to make those adjustments, because very quickly any hole, any flaw gets exposed.
Yeah, that's true. All right, one last question for y'all. This is a thought exercise. They have a player, Christian Encarnacion Strand, right now. Pretty good prospect that they got from the Twins in the Tyler Mahle trade, I believe. Christian Encarnacion Strand does make good contact, or at least he is this spring. And I think he leads the Cactus, or not the Cactus. Yes, the Cactus. Yes, Cactus.
The Cactus.
He leads the Cactus League in hits. He is hitting the ball. He's hitting the ball for power. He's making contact. He looks like the future. He's played 208 plate appearances at AA last year, but he's 23. And by all rights, looks like he is ready to play in the big leagues. You've got some other pieces, Spencer Steer, Kyle, you know, Newman, Jonathan India. Maybe you're telling the story to ownership that Lodolo Green and Ashcraft are going to take that step forward. You put Luke Weaver and Luis Sessa behind them, so you have credible veterans there. The bullpen's coming together. This could be the year. Do you go break camp with Christian Encarnacion Strand as your everyday third baseman or first baseman? And start the clock on somebody like that? Or do you sort of keep your cards in your pocket for a little while longer if you're the Reds? Let's start with you, Katie.
I'm no fan of service time manipulation by any means, but if you're going to start the clock on a prospect, to me, it should come when your team is in contention. And I just, call me crazy,
Jordan
I see that for the
split.
Reds. Right. Right. No, subtle hint. But call me crazy, you guys. I just don't see that. I don't see the Reds in contention this year.
Is there an argument to be made, Britt, that you just have to start winning sometime? You just have to start trying sometime, and you don't know when that time's going to be? I don't know.
Sure. I mean, that's a great argument for us to have. But I think if you're in the front office and you have to defend your decisions, and you're also planning on being part of the Reds front office besides this year, right? Then no, you can't. I agree with Katie. You have to say, all right, we've rebuild. We're looking at this in like, that's the thing. Front offices look at these in like 3 to 5 year increments. So there's really no way to defend being like, yeah, let's start that clock now, so that in 3 years, we really are going to have to do, you know what I mean? Like, it has the ripple effect on the whole plan that the front office has laid out. So I don't see that happening at all. Because like Katie said, they're not a fringy, if they were like the Cubs and you're like, well, it could help them get over the top. Maybe, but they're just not in that position at all. So I don't see them, even though they've kind of changed with the new CBA, you know, the way we look at service time manipulation, I don't see the upside here for Cincinnati at all.
Okay, well, how about this? There is a draft pick associated with a player that receives sufficient awards consideration. They could get a draft pick. If he's
but you're banking on a lot of things to go right.
Yeah, that's so subjective. You're banking on baseball writers to vote for your guy, for your
that's
guy to have
weird.
That kind of a year.
Don't trust
don't
baseball
like
writers. What do we
don't trust
yet?
Baseball writers? All right, I think we can end on that note. Don't trust a writer. Thanks so much to Britt and Katie for this episode. Thank you for listening. Please, Derek, come back. Thanks so much. And as I have to say, at some point, you've always got the green light here.